Comments made on the Serotalk podcast are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast.
Serotalk podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, creators of System Access, the System Access mobile network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Michael Locke.
Welcome to Serotalk. Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 62 from March 1st, 2011. This is Michael Loff.
I'm Ricky Inger.
And I'm Joe Steinkamp.
Coming up, we will be speaking with Davey Cager and Arion from PlayingInTheDark.net. They're the makers of Top Speed 3.0. It's a pretty awesome racing game. If you're really into gaming, of course, you can listen to Tech Chat 91 as well, where we talk about that with Liam Irvin and Michael Frizzano from RS Games. And Michael Fair, the creator and first editor of Odyssey magazine. Well, Ricky, CSUN is coming up.
Yes, CSUN is approaching in just a couple of weeks. And of course, Serotech will be there. We'll have Serotalk doing interviews. You can drop by and see us in booth 820. That's actually the same booth we were in last year. I kind of like it. It's a nice booth. I'm pretty fond of it. I'm also going to be delivering a talk on making classrooms, conferences, and presentations accessible with the AE Hotspot. I'll have the AE Hotspot itself there delivering the content for the presentation as I speak. That's going to be on March 16th at 9:20 in America's Cup B. So come and join me for that. It's going to be early in the morning, but bring your coffee and lots of good questions, and we'll have a great time.
Well, speaking of travel, let's begin with travel news. Quite a few stories. Delta Airlines has been fined a whopping $2 million for disabilities violations, and this is the largest fine against a single airline from the Department of Transportation in a consumer protection case. But Delta has failed to help passengers needing assistance in getting on and off the airplanes and did not respond to consumer complaints from persons with disabilities, as they are required to by law, within 30 days of a written complaint being filed. Now, this took place in 2007. In 2008. So if you feel that everything's been good with Delta, that's why. These are things that happened a few years ago. And $750,000 must be paid within 30 days to the Department of Transportation. The other $1.25 million is to be used for investments in improving their service beyond the requirements by law. And they can include things like automated wheelchair tracking system, customer service surveys, and website enhancements. It's interesting that I saw 4 out of the 10 airlines, the websites are inaccessible. And maybe that's the underlying motive for some other lawsuits that are taking place as well. A lawsuit has been filed against JetBlue by the California Council of the Blind and 3 California residents who have visual impairments. That's been filed in federal court. And the suit alleges inaccessible website and also the airport check-in kiosks that are inaccessible to persons with visual impairments. Well, I don't know any kiosk that is accessible, so I guess apparently people are finally speaking up. What are your thoughts on that, Ricky?
I would love to see these kiosks accessible. I've never seen one which is, and I guess this is a great place to start. I think that a lot of people don't really consider this when going to the airport. We've just gotten so accustomed to having to stand in line or get the aid of a human for something that's easily done through self-service by everybody else. So yeah, I think this is great. We don't have to, you know, turn over credit card information to somebody who's helping us. We don't have to try and either flag down a stranger or get one of these people who seem to be very busy. And even though this is part of their job, they kind of say, okay, well, honey, we'll wait on you in just a second. It'd be so great to just get a machine that could do all that stuff accessibly.
And a group of blind travelers has filed a suit against United Airlines, claiming that the airline's digital kiosks are inaccessible to blind people. And again, stating that 4 out of 10 websites, including that of United, are inaccessible to the blind.
Some of the websites are inaccessible, but we do have things like Orbitz and even Travelocity that sort of combine searches for various airlines, and you can do one-stop shopping and that sort of thing. With Travelocity, though, they have been filed against for an inaccessible site. They have agreed to now make their website accessible to the blind. Actually, I don't think they received a lawsuit. I think they entered into structured negotiations, right?
I believe so. I didn't see that story, but yeah, they made some corrections there. And in the case of JetBlue, they didn't go into structured negotiations,
right.
So they're proceeding with the lawsuit where they're concerned. And airlines are also getting away from using these third-party entities like Travelocity because it's cutting into their bottom line.
I guess it is cutting into the bottom line, but it's certainly convenient. Now, the interesting thing to me about Travelocity, I just recently used it to book your flight. It was perfectly accessible. They are supposed to have all this stuff done by June 2011, but I've never experienced any problems with it, so I'm not sure what the issues are. I'm just glad that they have agreed to begin addressing them, whatever they are.
Well, in the lawsuit fund, first of all, we have the AFB, who is applauding Disney Parks for their deployment of a 7-ounce wireless device that offers descriptions of 50 attractions plus important things like restrooms and several features available to the deaf. This device is free but does require a refundable security deposit. But not all people are happy with Disney, because last September, a class action lawsuit has been brought against Disney by three visually impaired ladies, stating that the Disney website relating to its theme parks, hotels, and restaurants are inaccessible to the visually impaired and violate the ADA. Disney says they have no special obligation to the blind community as a group and asserts that decisions regarding accommodations for visually impaired should be made on a case-by-case basis.
This is absolutely ridiculous to me, especially when you consider that the problem is their website. Now, is someone going to have to write individually to Disney and say, I was trying to order tickets for some upcoming show or whatever on your website, and I need to be accommodated because I couldn't do it accessibly on your site? The idea of approaching accessibility on a case-by-case basis is way off the mark to begin with, and I really think it's going to lose them a lot of money as they approach their website in this way, because a lot of people, including the aging population, you know, hey, your grandma wants to take the kids to Disney and order tickets and so on, but the site isn't accessible. They're missing out on a whole lot, and I really hope they can reconsider this.
You know, it got me thinking, though, because they're saying it's inaccessible to screen reader users by using inaccessible flash, which brings up the point, what if the problem is a specific screen reader? What if, say, for example, I see sites now that work with two out of what I consider to be the big four Windows screen readers, but not the other two? So what about when the sites are using Aria, Ajax, and UI automation, and a particular screen reader can't work with that, but another one can, and it comes down to which screen reader is being used?
That's an interesting point, because that does happen. Take the Travelocity site, which we just talked about. It works perfectly for me, but it may not be so great with other screen readers. And at what point do you say, you know, this has been designed accessibly, but the support in the screen reader isn't there? Now, for Disney, they had some other concerns aside from this, like the videos or the music would start playing automatically, blaring through your speakers, and you couldn't hear your screen reader when that was happening, and there was no easy way to stop it. To me, that's just stupid website design in general, because what if you're trying to do something on your lunch break at work? You know, you're sitting there with your sandwich and so on. It's your off time, and you're trying to order some tickets, and you get this dun-dun-dun-dun, and everybody in the office knows that you're doing something, and it's very distracting.
Amid protests, all the activity going on in the Middle East, you know, in Egypt and Libya, some are asking, should Facebook allow anonymous posting so that people don't risk ridicule from their governments? And I personally, again, this is the opinion of Michael Off, but I say absolutely not. Someone asked me about this to comment on Twitter, and I won't debate on Twitter under the Cero Talk account because it's primarily a one-way vehicle for news, and I don't want to get into arguments and bombard people with a lot of commentary on that. But I do want to say here that my personal opinion is that Facebook has 500 million people because people are interacting with real, accountable people. And my experience from doing chats and, you know, hey, there are thousands of entities allowing anonymous comments. anonymity, from what I've seen, breeds fraud, terrorism, verbal abuse, death threats. You know, there's a lot of good uses for anonymous comments. I just don't think Facebook should go there. I think that would defeat the whole purpose of Facebook. But so I certainly feel for the people in these warring nations and wanting to report what's going on. But I really don't know how you can do that under anonymity, or certainly there's other means maybe that they need to look at other than Facebook. But one thing you can be certain of is that Facebook is monitored. And I assure you, if there's certain words that you post, certain strings, the FBI in the U.S. will show up at your door within an hour. I guarantee you that.
You know, what's weird to me, though, is that there are services that provide more anonymity, like Twitter, for instance. You don't really have to validate who you are. And it seems like that would be a logical place to do some of these protesting activities. And it never really happened, certainly in the Middle East issues and so on. People, I guess, just don't get the same results through Twitter as they would through Facebook.
Well, maybe that's a numbers thing. We saw a new study that said 50% of people are using Facebook, while only 7% are using Twitter. And that varies depending upon your location. But certainly Facebook is in your face, so to speak.
In your face?
Cheesy, I know. Well, after finding problems with the Facebook API, folks are working on a technology to use email for posting status and receiving status information. And a few folks are beta testing this and seem to be liking the results. It's troublesome to me that the Facebook API is so flawed that someone can't write a good third-party app to make up for some of the accessibility deficits.
Apparently, it's really quite bad, where you would have some things that appeared to be implemented correctly in the API, and the results that you would get from queries against that would randomly change or not even be there. And there was really no rhyme or reason to that. Facebook does have an API, and good on them for doing that. They just might need to improve it a little before we see more third-party apps taking advantage of that.
Well, Facebook is now using an alternative to the CAPTCHA. They've introduced something new called social authentication. Basically, it requires that you identify photos of your friends. So say you've lost your password, but what if you don't know the identity of your friends? Apparently, you get a few chances to identify a few different friends to choose from. But what I'm seeing are a lot of problems with people maybe trying to get as many friends as possible, you know, having 2,300 friends and not knowing all these people, adding new friends through the newly implemented Facebook groups. You join a group, and then when other people join that group, they can become your friends. So you could be getting 20, 30 new people per day.
This looks good on paper. I can see why they thought this was a good idea, but it really isn't. Even setting aside the issues of blind and visually impaired people not being able to really take part in this, but what if you're a person who is a celebrity of sorts? You know, you're well known in a particular community, and you reach out and friend a bunch of people. You're not necessarily going to know what they look like. You might have never met them. Or even people that you do know may look way different than they did in high school, or the photo albums that Facebook chooses from. You know, it might show a picture of this person's child or whatever, and it's not even them. I don't think this is going to work very well. And I guess they have rolled it out, at least to some degree, because I know some people have seen this, and blind and sighted alike have actually had issues with doing it.
So all I can say is, if you're blind, just don't forget your password, most importantly, and especially unless you have some sighted person who also just happens to know your friends.
Yeah, how likely is that? Well, I think she was kind of tall and a little bit short, and she's like pudgy, but like really thin too, somebody said. Definitely.
Well, coinciding with CSUN is an event called South by Southwest Conference, taking place in Austin, Texas, pretty much the same time, the 11th through 15th, some events going up to the 19th or 20th of March. And it's also known as SSXW. Say that 10 times real fast. And you can email access at SSXW.com to get information in particular to disabled patrons. Basically, you can receive a special badge that allows either a translator to join you or a personal attendant. and the extra individual does not receive their own credentials, but must accompany the individual who has purchased the badge. Let's speak with our resident Austonian, Joe Steinkamp. Give us a background, because unlike CSUN, South by Southwest is a mainstream event and a very large technology event, but there are some specific accessibility threads that go on there.
Yeah, South by Southwest is three events into one. There's an interactive, which focuses on the web, and it focuses on what's going on in electronic media. There's a movies portion where people debut their films, or there's a focus on spotlight of short films, like with the Cannes Film Festival or Sundance Film Festival. And then there's the music portion where bands come in and do concerts specifically for South by Southwest. Metallica actually did a club show. The Strokes are doing a free show. Radiohead likes to come here. Muse likes to come here and debut new material. So it's a huge event that has thousands of people at it. And one of the things that they've added to the interactive portion is an accessibility track, which is really exciting because some individuals come in and talk about this year the accessibility features of HTML5, some of the things that are involved in accessible website design. And then the one that I would be curious to see is Accessibility the Musical.
No way.
And there really isn't much on that description right now other than it's there. So what's also good about South by Southwest is last year's events have actually been posted. So these usually get converted into MP3. And so I'm hoping that we'll be able to attend the musical virtually. But it's Accessibility the Musical.
We now present an aria on Aria.
Yes, and I would be there with my hanky ready to go with my opera glasses. But unfortunately, this tends to happen at the same time as CSUN, so I've never really been able to attend the accessibility stuff because we're always doing stuff for the other show. But for those who can't make it out to San Diego, who are looking for a time that's really interesting, South by Southwest is a great, great thing, and I'm glad to see that they're doing more with accessibility and providing attendance, because it's huge. This is a great big event, and it helps to have someone to assist or at least be able to point you out in the way to go. And also the Capital Metro site, if you do a Google search for Austin Capital Metro, you'll get the public transportation information that's available here. There are talking buses, and most of the drivers are very familiar with how to direct people with mobility. And that really helps a lot too, because this is kind of the blind capital of Texas is Austin.
Yeah, and it talks about the events are scattered, and of course you really can't have motor vehicles in a lot of those areas, obviously motorized wheelchair, but there is a disability accommodations information that's provided outside of Exhibit Hall 4. It's called a Connection Center there at the Austin Convention Center. So email access@ssxw.com so that you can get the most out of the event.
And then we'll post the archives once when they're up. If they get those available, we'll throw those up on a future show.
Definitely, we can cover that in our This Month in Access Tech for March and other events as we find them through Twitter and on our podcast and so forth. Thanks, Joe, for that info. On to voice chat news. Many people are turning to a third-party app to add accessibility to their Skype, and that's called Skype Talking. It speaks things that are not automatically spoken, and as far as I can tell, works with every screen reader, at least the big four anyway, the JAWS, Window Eyes, NVDA, and of course, System Access. Ricky, I think you use it. I definitely use it, and it adds a few commands, things like the ability to bring someone into a conference. If you're already in a phone conference with a group of people and someone calls you, there's a hotkey to bring them in. You have hotkeys to give you any one of the last 10 messages that you've received.
Yep.
So it's a really cool add-on. Well, you may have heard of something called Skype Access. It has nothing to do with accessibility, but is a service allowing access to over 500,000 hotspots around the world. You can use your Skype credit on a pay-as-you-go per-minute basis rather than paying per hour or per day, and includes over 500 airports, 30,000 hotels, and many other locations, and some big-name partners throughout the world, including BT Open Zone in the UK, Phone M3 Connect in Germany. Service, this could be kind of cool. It's called Row 44. It's an in-flight broadband service.
Nice.
Others in South Africa and Australia and so forth. I didn't see any specific providers in the U.S., so I'm not sure how the states are covered.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the states are covered yet.
I mean, I saw a mention of Verizon, but...
Well, I think this just started being rolled out. We'll see an increase in the number of providers as time goes on, I would suspect.
Well, a lot of people are looking for alternatives to Skype because of the increased breakups of late, especially podcasters and people trying to broadcast with the technology. Those following Fidelophone can get 1.0 RC12, so they're working feverishly on a broadcast quality voice chat or two-way conversation solution. Those of you listening to our podcast may notice a little difference in the audio quality over the last three episodes. That's because we are now using Cerotech's own voice chat system. So a lot of people are looking for alternatives to Skype to do their voice communications. And now it's that time that we all know and love, and some maybe not love so well. It's Apple news. And the top story would be that Apple has announced five new MacBook Pros starting and ranging in price, I should say, between $1,199 and $2,499. We'll give you the link where you can get more. But the big items are the 15 and 17-inch models now all have quad-core processors. And the 13-inch units have dual-core. The $1,199 is an i5 2300 megahertz processor. The 1400 is a dual-core 27 i7. So pretty powerful processors under the hood, and you can learn more at www.apple.com/MacBook Pro, where you can get other upgrade options. You can go with SSD drive, go up to 8 gig of RAM on these units. And a new port has been introduced called Thunderbolt. And this is a technology from Intel allowing data transfers up to 10 gig per second.
Wow.
So this is really blows away USB and FireWire. And apparently you can have six different devices running off of this one port, which kind of looks like a video port. So you could use it for a variety of different technologies. There's nothing currently available to interface it with. And I guess it'll be 2012 before you see it on other motherboards and used in the Windows space. So Apple's going to have a whole one-year jump on this technology, it would appear. That's, I would say, the big story in Apple. iPad 2 will be announced on March 2nd.
Well, as glorious as Apple sounds, have you ever wondered what it would be like to work at the Apple store around all those lovely gadgets and gizmos and getting to talk to customers about how wonderful everything is and so on? There's actually an article entitled Confessions of an Apple Store Employee, which it has an anonymous person who is talking about what it's like to work at Apple. You know, Apple is known as one of the most secretive companies in the industry, and that includes its employees. They don't know what's coming down the pike until the day that it happens. You know, they get to work. Hey, guess what? There are new MacBook Pros, and this is what their specs are. The article talks about a person who really doesn't even look at newspapers and blogs and things like that for speculation because they don't want to be in a position where they sort of let slip something to a customer about, hey, this could possibly happen, because that's a definite no-no with Apple.
Yeah, quite a few interesting elements in this story. I would encourage reading it. He refers to evil customers that can basically get their way because they come in and make enough noise. And, you know, Apple's this Apple-friendly, let's party, it's all good environment. They talk about drug dealers who come in and try to buy iPhones with fake IDs or fake credit cards, even using dead person's social security numbers. Undercover security guards and maybe retired cops that you don't know because they're plain clothes, just kind of hanging out and mingling about the crowd. People using strollers trying to steal iPods.
Wow.
And time capsules. Hey, you name it, we can think of it. I was in a local Apple store. It was Apple reseller, basically, and someone came in claiming she needed money for a dead relative who recently died.
Wow.
But he's an Apple store. He must have money.
Yeah.
Apparently a pretty liberal attendance policy. You can be late up to 15 times, but as you said, do not talk to the press or even speculate about an upcoming iPad or a new device with a camera in it, and you're basically finished. Visitors include homeless people jamming death metal on the Bose speaker system, people changing languages. You know, the blind, you know, we go in there and we turn on voiceover, just go through command F5 on all the machines.
Nice.
Apparently, sightlings like to change the language, you know, maybe to Korean or Russian or something, so the staff don't know how to get it set back.
That shouldn't be funny, but it is.
Then, of course, there's the phone room with callers seeking everything from therapy to women wanting help to find out if their husbands are cheating on them. I cheat. There you go.
$3.99 in the Mac App Store.
But also people wanting their iPhones unlocked. And of course, the ultimate goal is sales. Your ultimate goal is to move up the ladder. So you'd be working at the Genius Bar.
Yeah, everybody wants to be a genius.
Not so pleasant Apple news. It looks like a new report shows activity in 2010 with various manufacturers throughout Asia. A number of problems here. Everything from child workers, bribes, involuntary labor. Involuntary labor.
Yeah, we will force you to work. I think there were some exposure to toxic chemicals as well.
Yeah, one facility exposing workers to toxic chemicals. Four facilities gave false payroll reports. One incident of bribery and 91 underage workers across 10 different facilities. And apparently they have to pay for them to go back to school and finish school. Apple is really involved in making sure that these companies do right when they find out about, you know, they really have to triage and say which are minor offenses or which ones are major or we're not going to do business with you anymore.
Well, and I think they had to do something very public-facing after the Foxconn issues in 2010. They were definitely under scrutiny after that. And so I don't want to be so cynical as to say that these reports and these investigations were due only to that and that Apple wanted to, you know, make sure that it does still look squeaky clean and so on. But I do think it's part of it.
Well, I think labor issues and abuses is a problem for any major entity. So this is really right. The Foxconn and the suicides and things has really brought light to a very serious issue. Well, apparently you could get iOS for your FiOS. That's right. Verizon is giving $200 gift cards to people buying TV, internet, and landline phone packages. Basically, it can be applied to either an iPhone or other smartphone. And only one story from the Apple rumor mill, a Taiwanese website, has proven to be pretty accurate and says that Apple has built three prototypes of its next iPhone. One model allegedly has a slide-out physical keyboard. And a lot of people, myself included, are pretty excited about the concept of that because there's just times I don't want to be feeling around on my touchscreen, you know? So we'll see if that actually comes to fruition.
And you don't want to necessarily carry a big old Apple keyboard around or even a folding keyboard. But I don't see how they're going to do this, especially given Steve Jobs, what I jokingly refer to as fear of buttons. And even though he's not officially at the helm right now, I think his philosophy is pretty entrenched. You know, Apple wants thinner, sleeker, different than everybody else. And I don't know how they're going to do a slide out keyboard and keeping it thin and sleek and all that fun stuff. I don't see them doing this, you know, without going against the grain of what Apple's sort of known for. So we shall see.
Yeah, one of the three units has a better camera, and I can only hope so for those of us needing iOS devices for OCR technology. So I didn't see much specific about the third one. I guess just better hardware than the iPhone 4, basically something to replace the 3G and 3GS. An article at LockerGnome.com outlines the top five free GPS apps. And I'll see, Ricky, if you're using any of these. They include Google Maps for mobile, something called Waze, W-A-Z-E. There is MapQuest for mobile. That's MapQuest space, the number four space mobile. There's one called Scobler or Scobler, S-K-O-B-B-L-E-R. It is touted as the first truly free turn-by-turn voice navigation system, and one called MotionX GPS Lite.
Yeah, I'm actually not using any of these, but I know a little bit about a couple of them. Kevin Chow, who was just recently on our Books for All Tech Chat, he was using Scobler 3 or 4 months ago and was trying to get a dialogue with the developers because there were some things that were still inaccessible. I have also seen someone using the Waze GPS, and this one is kind of interesting because it's meant to sort of interface with social networking where you can get some crowdsourced information about, you know, how bad traffic is and things like that, and you can also update somebody every 5 minutes about where you are and how quickly you're going to get there. And a couple of people I saw using this definitely made me want to set up a filter for this kind of thing because you really, I mean, not everybody cares where you're going and how long it's going to take you to get there, but I can see it useful shared among a group of friends who actually want to know.
Crowdsourcing is kind of an interesting concept. You could use it for traffic problems. or like you said, right, a whole group of people that are going to a destination looking for a party, or and there's some interesting uses
you
for
don't
that.
Have to have like a walkie talkie.
Okay, I'm turning in 0.3 miles. Over. I think we lost you. Over. I'm in the midst of the woods. Is that where I'm supposed to be? Over.
Over and over again. Well, on to a few announcements from Cerotech. If you are looking for some meaningful employment, Cerotech is looking for the following. Some Mac and iOS developers, sales, tech support, and customer service representatives. So Cerotech always looking for the best of the best. You can send your resume to employment@cerotech.com. Two recent tech chats have taken place. There was Tech Chat 91, Accessible Games with Audio for the Blind. And joining us on that event was Liam Irvin with L-Works, Michael Forzano with RS Games, and Michael Fair with Odyssey Magazine. He created that and edited it for the first 4 years. Tech Chat 90 was Accessible Books Part 2 with Kevin Chow and Daryl Shandro. And we covered some new options for college books and even renting books and converting Kindle books to HTML, which is legal as decreed by the U.S. Library of Congress, and many other interesting topics. Check that out over at cerotalk.com or on SamNet through the either Information Center or Entertainment Guide. And not to mention, it's available on your iBlink radio application for the iPhone.
Well, speaking of Kindle, an article was just published stating that a study was done which seems to indicate that ebook piracy is on the rise. The guy who published the article is an author himself, and he was sort of talking about, you know, being half flattered and half annoyed when he saw his ebook being included in 2,500 quality ebooks for download, a torrent that you could get somewhere like the Pirate Bay or whatever. For him, it wasn't that big of a deal because his book was priced fairly low anyway, and after the publishers took their cut and so on, he was making maybe 50 cents on a book. But for the bigger guys, this may affect them a bit more. What I found interesting, though, is I don't know that piracy has increased. It may just be that more people are aware of how to get books. You know, I recall a time where the Usenet news groups, they had groups devoted to ebooks. There's IRC, where a lot of blind and sighted people alike, this isn't just a blindness thing, but people would be exchanging books that they had scanned themselves and so on. So I don't know if piracy has gone up. It's just that you don't necessarily have to scan your books first before you share them. What do you think?
Well, it was particularly talking about the Kindle books, which they have locked down pretty good. So I wonder if they're using the same technology that's been approved by the Library of Congress and if they're in HTML format. But yeah, books, you know, music, movies, people are going to do that kind of thing. And torrents is the number one tool that people are using to share works, with which they do not have the rights to do so. So I don't know if it's on the rise. People are looking for specific file sharing services, and I don't know if they've really tapped into torrents. Another tool is newsgroups. A lot of stuff going on there. I've never heard of the RIAA or MPAA really looking into, because maybe they don't understand the technology behind newsgroups. And that goes back to the beginning days of the internet, early days anyway. Well, we told you in our last podcast that Amazon will be competing with Netflix, and now it's a done deal with Amazon Prime members who pay $79 per year for free second-day shipping. Now also get, along with part of that Prime membership, access to 5,000 TV shows and movies. And while it doesn't currently offer the selection available to users of Netflix, it certainly should be growing over time. And one person we spoke with said they're having difficulty actually getting the content to play. So I don't know if it's an issue of it being new or if it has to do with security software. But we certainly want to give that a play and see what's going on there. If you're a member of Amazon Prime, you can get in there and take a look. Ricky, I have a few questions for you specifically about Amazon Prime, because it came up in the chat rooms the other night. Exactly what is covered? What can you use it for to get that free two-day shipping or very affordable next-day shipping if you got to have it right now, but has to be sold by and shipped by Amazon? I mean, is that thing, what about things like Amazon Grocer? What if you want to start using this for non-perishable foods? What kind of things can you use it for?
I don't know if you can use it for non-perishable foods. I haven't tried that yet. What I've generally found is that if you are purchasing from, say, a seller in the Amazon marketplace, then you're not going to be able to take advantage of that $3.99 overnight shipping. With that said, I have seen instances where it will say something like, order is fulfilled by a different supplier, but is shipped by Amazon.com. And so it will be very clear as you're looking for goods to purchase what is available through Amazon Prime and what is not eligible, because it definitely says this item is not eligible for Amazon Prime. And in that case, you just pay standard shipping.
Yeah, in that case, I've never purchased Prime because I didn't think I would accrue $79 of shipping, because sometimes I go with the third-party vendors for the price discounts on the purchase of the product. So that makes it of greater interest to me. I'll be curious to see reviews of people playing around with it and the quality, reliability of it. Is it like Netflix? If you go away and resume, will it remember where you left off? And how accessible is the Flash? And of course, you use it on Windows or Mac. This is something that'll be available for iOS devices. So all things to be seen on how this is implemented and what additional titles, TV shows and movies Amazon adds to the service over time. In Google News, Google has announced a service called OnePass. It's an alternative to Apple's subscription-based service, but OnePass promises 90% of revenue going to publishers as opposed to Apple's 70% model, where the publishers get 70% and Apple gets 30% commission.
Equally important, Google is allowing publishers access to the same data that they've always had access to, whereas Apple has been definitely a bit more locked down in that respect. And they would give publishers access to some data, but it was only the data that they deemed important to pass along to the publishers. So Google's OnePass is certainly a bit more open.
Well, Google is also expected to launch its own music service. It was announced at the Mobile Conference on February 18th in Barcelona, and they said it would be offered sooner rather than later. The music service is rumored to cost about $25 per year. It's a streaming service, cloud-based storage of your music, and you can listen to your stuff from anywhere. The service is projected to be launched on forthcoming Motorola Zoom, along with Android Honeycomb version 3.0. And the Zoom, of course, is expected to be really the first real competitor to the iPad. So I'd be very curious to see what inroads it makes into the markets and what its capabilities are. National Braille Press is looking for some Android users to test some apps. And if you are interested, you can contact Lindsay Broyhill via email at lbroyhill@nbp.org, or you can get the email address at serotalk.com.
Yeah, and as far as Android goes, I understand that Code Factory will be releasing its long-awaited product that it has developed for Android. We'll all be very curious to see what that's like. They'll be doing that the week of February 28th.
And we will have a special tech chat covering that on March 10. So stay tuned to serotalk.com, and you can find out what's coming down the pike from Code Factory for the Android operating system. The FCC is expected to propose new rules for reinstating video description at an open meeting that's to take place on March 3rd. The previous efforts were overturned by the courts, but now they have some legal legs to stand on due to mandates recently passed by the 21st Century Telecommunications and Video Accessibility Act. If you paid for the service IVI, it's a video streaming service, but the courts have ruled that this service is illegal because they did not get permission from the TV stations whose broadcast feeds they were streaming over the internet. It includes stations in New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, and Seattle. Sony has launched a music streaming service called Music Unlimited in the U.S., Australia, and New Zealand. It's a cloud-based subscription plan offering, to start with, 6 million songs from Universal Music Group, Sony Music Entertainment, Warner Music Group, EMI Music, and some leading independent labels. The service debuted in the UK and Ireland in December 2010, expanded to Germany, Italy, and Spain in January 2011, and now in the US, Australia, and New Zealand. It looks like you must have one of the many Sony-supported devices to make this happen, but they did say the Vio and PCs, so hopefully eventually everyone can use this on their mainstream computers. It also will be eventually offered on Sony and other third-party Android devices. But the big question, in the words of Jonathan Edwards, how much does it cost? There's two services. There's a basic service, which is $3.99 per month US, $4.99 Australia, or $5.99 in New Zealand. If that's not good enough for you, there is the premium service. In the USA, that's $9.99 a month, Australia $12.99, or New Zealand $13.99. The basic offers, think of them as radio stations, without the DJ, but just musical stations listed by genre, by year, and by mood. The premium service offers, first off, a one-time 30-day free trial, so you can play around with it. But in the premium service, you can create playlists of your favorites. You can gain access to premium top 100 channels updated with
the latest hits.
And like Pandora, through listening and kind of monitoring your habits, combined with your ability to do a like and dislike options to fine-tune your preferences, and it analyzes your current music collection, the service will adapt to your musical preferences and will tailor the music channels to your likes. First off, will they have mechanisms in place to prevent recording? I can already see the blind folks sitting there with Total Recorder or something in the background.
Yes.
And I can't think of the name of it, but I did install one music app. After about 5 or 6 seconds, it would sense that the stream is being recorded and would actually mute the audio, leaving it totally useless.
Oh, really? So it can be done, I guess.
Oh, it certainly can be done. But, you know, with the controversy that Sony has had in the past with the rootkits, I would be curious about
yes.
what mechanisms, if they're looking at your music collection, and did you rightfully pay for that, or was it acquired by your friends and torrents and all that stuff based on either ID3 tags or... So I would certainly want to read the terms of service when dealing with Sony.
Definitely.
And that's the opinion of Michael Loft.
Well, in happy software news, we finally see Service Pack 1 released for Windows 7 and Server 2008.
Yeah, other than offering some better interfacing to Windows Server 2008, there's really no new features to speak of. A few bug fixes here and there, but really nothing much to justify its size of 650 meg and the up to 1 hour that it can take to download and install it on your system. But it has been released, and we all want the latest and greatest. And of course, those of you who use TechNet, you can go and get new updated Windows 7 images with SP1 integrated into them. Great for when you're installing on a new computer or, you know, reinstalling Windows for whatever reason. An article entitled IE9 Assistive Technology Enhancements. Not really a lot here when I read through it, but it made one thing quite clear, that the days of mirror drivers are coming to an end. Microsoft wants to get away from that. Talked about all that cool stuff like off-screen models. So if you're interested, you can read about it. It sounded more like marketing to me, but definitely the gist I walked away from is bye-bye mirror drivers.
Yes, and I do have to say that, you know, Saratech wasn't as strongly affected by the move away from mirror drivers in IE9 as other screen reader manufacturers may have been, but what I really like is that it sounds a lot like marketing speak, but it happens to be true. Microsoft did work very closely with screen reader manufacturers as they did this, and they were very good about providing builds, getting feedback from people, working on things that were reported. So thank you, Microsoft, for being communicative in that respect.
A new survey by the Media Access Group at WGBH wants your input on using synthetic speech with online described content. This is the future, and I really believe in the next year or two, we're going to see online versions of described movies and TV shows. And it's years overdue, but I'm looking forward to that. And this survey could take a few minutes to complete, but by all means, give your input. And what do you think about that? Are you happy to compromise and use synthetic speech rather than a human narrator if it increases the number of titles? Or maybe it's something integrated right into the web browser so that the browser, using the voice that is chosen, actually reads the content at the appropriate place, whether it's HTML5 or DAISY or, you know, however they implement the new technology to make it work. Ricky, I have a question for you. Do you wear a timepiece?
You know, I don't. And there's a specific reason for that. Well, there are two, actually. One is that pretty much all of the watches that I've seen, be they Braille and certainly even more prevalent with the talking watches, they just don't look very attractive. I mean, you can be wearing a suit and heels and look all nice and professional, and you got this big square plastic watch on your hand, and, you know, you try and check the time kind of discreetly, and you get... really loud, angry-sounding woman. So yeah, they don't look good, and they don't sound good. So I don't have one.
So would you be interested in buying an attractive watch with refreshable Braille? And if so, how much would you be willing to pay for such a watch?
Well, this is interesting. I've listened to the interview, which is done by JJ from Blind Bargains. He interviewed David Chavez, who is in the midst of researching the manufacturer of the Haptica Braille watch, where, yeah, it's going to have refreshable Braille. He definitely made a point of designing this in an aesthetically pleasing way, which I was really happy about. And he said that people have actually asked him, cited people, well, why are you going through all this trouble to make this look good? I mean, it's for the blind. That was quite the comment. I mean, the blind people want to look good too. The other thing I really like about this watch is that with Braille watches, I always had the problem of altering the time when I went to check it. Maybe I just don't have a light enough touch, but I would be checking the time and maybe move one of the hands and so on. And so this is definitely going to be more accurate. The price that they want for this, though, they're considering $250. And on one hand, I'm thinking, wow, that's really expensive, especially if I can check the time on my phone. But on the other hand, I've never had a nice looking and functional for my needs timepiece, and I might pay that much. I'd at least consider it. I'd be better if it were $175 or so, but you know.
You're just a haggler, you, that's all. So the question is, how many people have given up wearing watches and solely relying on their phones now? I see a lot of folks who have done that. They've gotten rid of the watch and rely on their phone, and let's hope the battery doesn't die, but they use their phone to get their current time. So check out a great interview that JJ did with David Chavez with Haptica, and if you're interested, you can go and actually make a donation to help them get the necessary money to make that happen. Ricky, this is something we really got to look at for Cero Talk, in particular the Tech Chats, maybe the podcast as well, so it can document all the ums that we say and edit out after the fact. But IBM has released what they call Ability Lab Voice Transcription Manager, or VTM, and it interfaces with the Windows 7 speech recognition, Dragon Naturally Speaking, and even some voice over IP clients, including Skype, to create a text transcript of what is being spoken. Now, this could be a great tool for persons who are deaf-blind, but it's available for a limited time, as basically they're testing it right now, and persons can put the application through its paces. And this is something I'm going to play with, and I'll be curious to see how well the transcriptions come out. But hopefully, I would have the ability to edit them, because you know it's going to make mistakes. And
oh, yeah, it has the ability to wreck a nice beach, as the old kind of speech recognition saying goes.
Two announcements in screen reader land. Nuance has released Talks version 5.2 for Symbian phones. It adds support for the OVI maps, some new Symbian 3 devices, and 5.2 is a free upgrade for all premium edition licenses generated after November 13, 2007. And U.S. residents can now purchase the Cobra screen reader produced by Baum Retech AB of Germany. The U.S. reseller is Bay Area Digital, a company run by former ACB president Chris Gray. There are three purchase options for the Cobra screen reader. There's speech and braille for $749, speech and magnification for $749, or speech with both braille and magnification for $849. And you can get the link for that at serotalk.com, along with our interview that I conducted with Baum at ATIA in Orlando just a few weeks ago. A story from the BBC tells of Keith Jones, who didn't let the lack of eyesight stop him from tackling two burglars.
Right on.
Unfortunately, they got away when he reached for the phone to actually call authorities. But nothing was taken. He did deter any theft.
Yeah, and he was actually able to give a decent description to the police. Obviously, he couldn't tell what color hair they had or anything like that, but he was able to say, you know, one guy was quite fat and the other guy was a little taller than me. You can really pick up a lot if you're getting somebody in a bear hug or you're throwing them to the ground to deter them from stealing your stuff. So, you know, I got to wonder, how did the burglars feel? I bet they were pretty much thinking, if they knew he was blind when they got in, they probably thought, hey, this is going to be easy. He's just going to sit there. He probably doesn't know where he is anyway, and this will be simple. And no, they had to run away instead.
Well, like hearing success stories, that's always a gamble. I mean, you never know who has a gun or a knife or whacked out on meth or something. And, you know, they can have unusually great strength. So I'm glad it worked out for Keith. And who knows, one day when we hear the story of, we talked about this before, of a blind gun owner who just out of fear just takes care of business. But anyway, congratulations to Keith. And I like the story I read about a cat, a blind cat, who clawed the eyes of a burglar.
Nice.
Nice. Here's our final story, an interesting article entitled Nine Ways to Make Money from Your Podcast, and offer some great suggestions on making money. Some of the tips include partnering with one of three different services overseen by Adam Curry, who is the godfather of podcasting, including companies like Mevio, Podtrac, and Wizard Media. Basically, they sell advertising on either a CPM, which stands for cost per thousand. That's right, folks, M is a Roman numeral. Or CPA, cost per action basis, and revenue is split 50-50 between Adam, who should do very nicely with that, and the actual podcasters. Some other tips include maybe giving some of your material away, but charging for other podcasts, or some even maybe give you the first 20 minutes and then charge you for the rest of the presentations. And there's a lot of great ideas there. And we mention this because I have some really exciting future ideas and plans for Serotalk. So if you are out there doing a podcast in the access technology space and you're ready to take it from a hobby into maybe an actual career or at least some side revenue to cover your costs, get in touch with us, resources@serotalk.com, because we need to talk.
Indeed we do.
So that's what we have in the latest AT and mainstream technology news. Join us March 3rd for Tech Chat 92, this month in Access Tech. Top stuff for February. March 10th, the big announcement, Code Factory for Android. And, of course, our great CSUN coverage that we'll be offering. And stay tuned for our interview with Playing in the Dark and the new Top Speed 3 racing game.
Thanks for listening. See you in a couple of weeks.
Playing in the Dark.
Michael Off here, speaking with Davey Cager and also Arion, and we're talking about the latest version of Top Speed, version 3, racing game with a lot of audio, giving it as real a feel as you're certainly going to get on the keyboard, other alternative input devices as well, I guess. But thank you guys for joining us. So, Davey, are you actually the developer? You the coder, is that correct?
Presently, I am, though there is this other Davey, who's named Davey Loates, who originally came up with the idea, I think, as a hobby project, and he did the original coding for version 1 and 2, and then I and another person called Leonard took over in, I think, 2007, and ever since we have been the main developers.
So the game has been around for quite a while. I think Top Speed 2 came out in 06 maybe, or was it 05? I seem to recall playing with that.
I think it was 5.
Yeah, sounds right. Okay, so Arion, are you like the big beta testing guy? You find all the bugs and get to play with the latest, greatest builds and find little problems with it, or where's your involvement?
Yeah, I guess you could call it that. I have been around beta testing the game after version 2. Yeah, I basically test it and see if everything works the way it should work.
Kind of what's new in 3.0? What have you brought to the table that's new?
We first came up with 2.1 because we got this source code and we were at school and studying and all that. So we didn't think we'd have much time to thoroughly develop the game. Plus, we didn't have the knowledge. I mean, we're not skilled programmers, or we were not back then. We have certainly learned. So that was going to be 2.1, and I think people have actually played that as well. Release candidates there with more tracks and mainly bug fixes, like silly things in 2.0. When navigating through the menus, you would, if you did it quickly enough, you would hear all sorts of voices at the same time. They would not cut each other off and things like that. So we mainly fix those. After we edit like extra features with new surfaces, new vehicles, all that, bug fixes, quite a few of them, we decided that 3.0 would be better because of the great overhaul of the game, and that has much more stable multiplayer. You can press all sorts of keys to hear your current time, your current lap percentage, track name, all that. So it's more usable, I would say. It's the same game, but with a lot of enhancements.
Okay, so give people a quick walkthrough who have never played it before. Go, wow, this sounds cool. I didn't know there was any kind of racing game for the blind with audio. So kind of give an overview of the website and kind of what your basic, you know, setup and what you need to know to get started.
The website would be playinginthedark.net. So playinginthedark, all one word without any punctuation, .net. And I think you can also get version 2 there. I don't know if Leonard removed it. But certainly version 3 with a keyboard and, well, I would say headphones, because speakers is not for this racing game, because it's really using your stereo image for actually positioning your car and hearing what's going on. So I would say headphones and a keyboard, and that will probably do it. As for what you need, I think it even runs on Windows 98 still, so don't worry about that. And you have the single race, so racing against the computer or doing a time trial where you can try to beat your own records. You can also do the multiplayer, which of course requires an internet connection, or a local network at least. And I think the manual and the website will all pretty well describe how to get going and what you need and all that.
So it is one, certainly, folks, to read the manual. How is it on resources? Will it work on a lower power processor like a netbook? Is there any problem there?
I have not tried it on my netbook, but given that it's on my laptop, using only a few percent of the CPU at most, when racing, and perhaps a little more when you're loading the game, but once it's going, it's pretty lightweight, so to speak, and doesn't use too much memory, about 70 megs at most. So that should, on most modern systems, not be a problem.
Is there any disadvantage to having a wireless keyboard? Does it give you a little latency, make the turns a little harder or anything? Or
I had that too with my Logitech. I don't know if it's a brand-specific issue, but this keyboard is great for typing. It comes with this USB dongle that you stick in your computer, and it sets up the connection. And it has a few milliseconds delay, which I don't know if it's a huge problem in top speed. I mean, it's real time, but not super time critical. But you will probably notice with a wireless keyboard.
Right, so if you have that benefit of a wired keyboard, that might just help you a little bit if you find it's just not quite acting as quickly as you need. That was what I found anyway.
Yeah, or you could go joystick, of course, if you're really into that sort of thing. That is supported as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask about alternative devices. People actually have steering wheels or other devices, a joystick?
Yeah, one thing we did, speaking of that, is indeed improve the steering wheel support. It was a bit limited with a lot of buttons you couldn't assign, and you could not use the point of view. I think they call them little knobs that some joysticks have. You can use all those, so we fixed that. So now you should, in theory, to use, well, pretty much any joystick or steering wheel, and if there's something not working, you can always report that, and definitely look into that.
Okay, so you have a public portal where people can race others, or you can actually set up your own network. You can set up locally using your bandwidth as a host, right? So how many people does that support? How does that work for people who maybe have slower internet connections? Kind of explain that process of people kind of setting up their own little race network.
It could be a problem if you have a slower internet connection. It could potentially cause delay. Most internet connections these days will support it just fine, because there won't be too many problems, because internet connections are reasonably fast these days. And the server is not actually public if you want to host a server on the internet. Other people cannot see it, so you have to have some means of communicating with people. For example, we have Twitter as well, and then if we are playing, or if anyone else is playing, we are using the hashtag TS3SRV for announcing when we are playing. And there's other means of communication as well. So if people want to join, they can if they want to.
That's a good idea. So you're saying people can post their server on Twitter to find others if they want to bring any folks in.
It's been done quite a bit lately. So there's just somebody around from Playing in the Dark that'll actually retweet that and say, hey, there's a server up here and there.
Well, TS3SRV. So how many people are doing that? Or do you feel comfortable disclosing that? I mean, how many people are playing the game or downloaded it or do you think use it on a daily or weekly basis?
It's not like I have all the statistics on that. I do have some idea. I mean, when version 3.0 was first released, it was obviously more than right now. It was everybody trying it out. So you had servers going pretty much all the time. That's slightly less now, although still every so often I do see one, every few days at least. Probably more, but I'm not following them all. Given that it's with 8 players at max, you don't really need all that many servers to keep going. And people actually, and that's something I found as well, like it best with a lot of players. And one issue with version 2.0 and 2.1 is the multiplayer was a bit clumsy. And even though you had speedy internet, it would still be sort of laggy. So with 3.0, that has been fixed, or at least as much as we can. So more people can join without actually slowing the game down. And I've seen a lot of people actually getting on the same server and enjoying it with 8 people, or at least 6 or 5. And that's definitely an improvement. And I think every few days people play that nowadays.
And to add to the challenge, you can now also use custom tracks in multiplayer mode. Custom cars were a bit too hard to code, I believe. But custom tracks, they are possible and you can use them. So if you have a great track you made yourself that's really challenging and you want your friends to play along, well, you can now in the new multiplayer mode.
If you're on Team Talk or some other medium of communication, and you're using a lot of bandwidth there, like if you're in stereo channels, what we found is that the game does sort of cause lag when you're doing that. But if you're in a lower bandwidth channel, or if you're using Skype or some other voice program, that shouldn't be a problem. But just if people are having that issue, that they are aware of it, I should probably say that you better not go into stereo rooms and all that big stuff while playing.
Now, I'm not sure differences between the US and Europe or what you would consider slow bandwidth. I mean, what if someone had like 256 or 384? Is it more of an issue of ping rates? And if someone can't keep really low ping values?
I mean, we never did real tests. We know how much the game is using, and it is, I think, over one race with 5 players, something like that, it uses, well, 100 kilobytes. If you're the server, you're sending out 100 kilobytes throughout that whole race. So spread over the race, that is not so bad. But there is this weird delay, like I said, when people are also doing some other stuff with their bandwidth. And given that it's direct play that we're using, which is a bit of an old technology, we're not exactly sure what's going on there, but it tends to sometimes slow down a bit.
Use the arrow keys and enter key to navigate through the menu. Main menu, quick start, time trial, single race. Select a track type, racetrack. Select a track, America, Austria. Select a vehicle, the Blackbird race car, the Firefox race car, the Feisty Mini, the Piddling Pickup, the Classic, the Cranked Up Quattro, the Classic. Select transmission mode, automatic, manual. You are player 2.
Prepare to race. 3, 2, 1.
Hard left.
You're in the lead.
Hairpin left.
You're in second position. You're in the lead.
Easy left.
Clear one is too close.
Hard right.
Clear
hairpin
one
left.
Is just behind you.
Easy right.
Only 2 more laps.
Hard left. Hairpin left. Easy left. Hard right. Hairpin left. Easy right.
Final lap.
Hard left. Hairpin left. Easy left. Hard right. Hairpin left.
Easy right.
Finished. Player two has won the race.
Well, then, what are you looking for the future? Is it going to be 3.1, or how far do you think you're going to take top speed?
Well, that depends. That's actually a question we've been asking ourselves, and actually posted it to the audio games forum and all those portals for audio games, is on the one hand, we have this idea about, well, either redesigning top speed or first releasing version 3.1 or something like that with new features, like people requested some stuff that we may be able to do. But on the other hand, looking at the code, like I said, direct play is pretty old. Direct sound is no longer officially recommended by Microsoft either. So given all those obstacles, I would say, and given how old the code is, it may be better to start something from scratch. And if that's going to be a racing game, we don't know. It's not even sure if we're going to go with playing in the dark or do other stuff on our own first.
Player three finished second. Player four finished third. Player one finished last.
Your time. 1:41.090 seconds.
It depends on the community interest, I would say. I mean, if there's a lot of donations, a lot of feedback from the community, a lot of servers up, a lot of custom tracks and vehicles, then the chances that we're going to release a new version are obviously bigger than when the game sort of dies out over time.
So the game is free, but people can make donations and... like you said,
yeah, sure.
It's the involvement of additional tracks and just how the community stands behind it. If you did go in a different realm and do something else, what might that be? What are you kind of considering?
Yeah, that's personal opinion, though. Not that we are a real company having company opinions, but I've always liked the idea of fantasy games and side-scrollers that have fantasy aspects, like magical creatures, all that, because racing is, yeah, that's a whole different genre. And we've been doing that for a few years now, throwing versions out to Arjun, who would test them, or Arion. At some point, you get enough of racing, especially when you're testing the game like we have been. And given my interest in these other things, I would say that something fantasy / side-scroller would probably, if I would design something right now, that would probably be where I would go.
Interesting. I have to ask, because I know someone will ask me if I don't, if... So, are you going to come out with a version for the iPhone where we could move our finger around the screens? No interest in looking at iOS, or because that's certainly a whole other operating system. And
I'm probably going to be really making people all jumpy and bad at me. I am definitely not a fan of Apple and iOS, so personally, I would say I'm not going to do that. For now, I would probably stick with Windows, but I know, for example, that Leonard is a big Apple fan, and so he might, given that he gets an iPhone, go that way, but I don't know. I mean, currently, my interest is mainly Windows, and playing in the dark is probably, we're going to stick there as well, simply because we have the code for top speed, which is all Windows, so it could work from there.
I guess my final question would be, are there any voice chat servers dedicated where people can talk to other top speed users as they're playing? I mean, they do it on our Serotech SamNet community, but I don't know if there's any Team Talk or Ventrilo servers where people are actually speaking with each other as they play.
What I know is that the server hosted by Andre Louis, who is also involved in TBRN, is one of the places where people meet up. And sometimes on this server that we're currently recording this on as well, which is rubyaccess.com. But it's usually something said on Twitter, like, hey, top speed, and you can go here and here to talk.
Thank you, Davey and Ariane, for sharing your info. Check it out, folks, if you always wanted to see how well you might do in a racing game. Top Speed 3.
Go try it out, and if you like it, be sure to give feedback.
So check it out, folks, at playinginthedark.net.
Select a track type, racetrack, go back, random, go back, main menu, quick start, exit game.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com or leave us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB-2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us in 2 weeks as we explore all the internet and life has to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life.